This episode of Discover ADN is brought to you by Alpha Efficiency, a monthly productivity magazine that focuses on helping people like you live purposeful lives by exploring new tools, techniques, and productivity principles. They offer insights for purposeful living instead of canned systems, allowing you to use only the tips and techniques that work for you. Check out Alpha Efficiency in the Apple App Store or on their website at alphaefficiency.com/magazine. Welcome to episode 6 of Discover ADN. My name is Jason Irwin, and I am the host of this program. The goal of Discover ADN is to learn more about the many creative, intelligent, and interesting people that use app.net to communicate with the world, as well as offer us a chance to attach a voice to the words and avatars we see flowing through our timelines. Want to be in the show or recommend somebody you think is interesting? Get in touch on app.net by sending a message to discoveradn. Today, I have the pleasure of talking with Chris Kreicho, who uses his real name on app.net. He lives in the United States and describes himself as a husband, father, theologian, writer, developer, designer, runner, Lord of the Rings fanatic, composer, poet, Whovian, and ultimate player nerd. He also hosts the up-and-coming podcast, Winning Slowly. Please join me in welcoming Chris to Discover ADN. Hello.
Hello.
So let me get right down to business. Can you tell us, when did you join app.net?
I believe it was February 2013. It was, I think, the end of February or the very beginning of March. So app.net had been going for a while. I'd heard about it for a while and had my eyes on it for a while. And I finally had set aside a little cash and said, let's do this thing.
All right. Well, why did you decide to do this thing? Why did you join?
Curiosity, for the most part, I think. I should say I also had been increasingly mistrustful of Twitter and, frankly, a lot of other places where advertising is the dominant pay model. So the idea of a social media back end like app.net with my payment to the service being the way they make money rather than my data being sold to advertisers being the way they made money was appealing to me. And then I'd heard about it in enough places that I was curious about it.
Okay. You use your full name on app.net.
I do. Very daring and bold.
Why not use a pseudonym?
I made a fairly strong commitment back when I started blogging in 2005 on a Zanga blog, if anyone remembers what those were anymore, that anything I wrote in public, I was just going to have the temerity to post as myself. Anonymity is not always a bad thing, but for my part, I found that it could encourage bad behavior, and I would sometimes say things on forums where I hid behind anonymity early in the 2000s that I wanted to grow out of that, and so I decided back then in 2005 that I was going to be Chris Kreicho in public thenceforth, and so I have been. And so all of my social media accounts and everything else, it's just me. And a big part of that is just wanting to have the integrity to make sure that anything I do anywhere on the internet is the sort of thing I'm okay with having linked back to me at any point in my future.
Okay. You don't have any qualms with people looking you up to maybe find some dirt based on what you've said in the past?
Well, I'm sure there's something of that sort someone could find somewhere, but in general, no. I have done my best to comport myself in such a way that there isn't dirt, so to speak. And a big part of that for me is just that I think as a Christian, I should be living my life with that kind of integrity. If I'm not, well, I'm certainly not doing any favors to my profession of following Jesus. And, well, at any point, I want to also have the humility to be able to look back and say, well, yeah, I got that wrong, but I've grown, and here's how I've grown. And I think that's important as well.
I agree. Okay. Can you tell us, what would you like to see more of on app.net?
Probably conversations about things that aren't programming. And of course, I have to be the first to admit that I'm as bad an offender as anyone else there. But the conversations I've enjoyed most on app.net, for all that I get good fun times out of discussing Apple and Microsoft and Google and technology and programming and all of that in general, the conversations I've enjoyed most have been conversations about everything from religion to sexuality to politics and so on. And so more of those kinds of things, especially in the relatively unique environment of relatively respectful conversations on those topics that I've experienced on app.net, well, I would like more of that. And secondly, and this may sound a strange thing, but I would really love to see more women interacting on app.net. It is, unfortunately, like a lot of the tech world, pretty heavily dominated by middle-class white guys talking. And so more varieties of viewpoints would be very welcome in my view.
Yeah, that would be really beneficial to not only the network, but as well as our own worldview.
Mm-hmm. Very much so.
All right. Let's change gears a little bit. Can you tell us, what do you like to be known for?
Ooh, there's a tricky question. I would have to say I would like to be known for intellectual integrity and honesty, and then just kind of doing things well across the board. And across the board means in all the kinds of sorts of different things I do, which range from podcasting on my own podcast to writing on my own blog to doing my seminary work to, you know, playing Ultimate and running half marathons. I just try to do all of those things well. And where there's intellectual engagement involved, I try to be intellectually honest, including about my own faults and failures, and to admit when I'm wrong and run with it. Not sure if that's exactly what you're looking for, but hopefully it starts moving in the right direction at least.
I think it does. Okay, you've mentioned that you have a podcast, Winning Slowly. Can you tell us what made you start podcasting?
My friend Stephen Carradini and I, you can follow him on app.net, but it's not going to be very productive as I think he has a whole whopping one post. He and I have been friends for about 7 years, met back in college when we were both students at the University of Oklahoma. And over that span of time, we've just had a lot of really interesting conversations. He's one of the few people I know in real life that has as broad an array of interests as I do. So one of the few people with whom I can talk about everything from theology to ethics to culture to art to economics and back again, not to mention, of course, all the sorts of things going on in our personal lives that we talk about. And after quite some time of back and forth on private messaging services via whatever client on the back end and many conversations in person, we said, we really ought to start doing this in public in some way because people seem to enjoy it when they overhear these conversations or participate in these conversations. We also think there's a gap in a lot of discussion, especially in the tech and cultural spheres we listen to, where everything tends to focus on right now and focus on immediate gratification to desire, but also immediate solutions to problems. And we don't think that a lot of our problems are tractable in the short term, but they may be in the long term. And likewise, we don't think that the kinds of solutions you come up with in the short term are necessarily beneficial in the long term. And so we kind of had this idea that we were batting around for a while of, even before we started thinking about a podcast, of doing things right by being willing to take the long view, being willing to go the slow way if that's the right way to do it. And so when eventually the idea of a podcast came up, the idea of winning slowly, of getting to the right solution by taking our time to be careful and thoughtful and maybe not make the quick buck, maybe not earn instant popularity, but ultimately do the right thing, that was an easy sell for us. Whether we're pulling it off yet in the actual podcast, well, only our listeners can say.
All right. Well, I think that also describes where the name comes from.
That's right.
All right.
We wanted to give the idea of doing things a little differently, and winning slowly is a rather unusual phrase, and so we hoped it would catch people's attention and get them tuned into where we were going with it.
Well, the first thing I thought of when I saw you talking about your podcast many, many weeks ago, or months now, was the tortoise and the hare.
Yeah, and that's exactly the kind of thing we have in mind, of that steady, dedicated progress that gets there in the end rather than burning out in a quick flash, especially in a, you know, I'm thinking of the tech media in particular right now, where it's, if you don't have a new product out right now, you're doomed to failure. And we can laugh maybe especially at the tech media's portrayal of Apple that way. But it's really not just Apple, it's everybody. And insofar as Apple has been successful, insofar as Microsoft was extremely successful in the 90s and early 2000s, and insofar as companies in general build long-term success, I think we all have to admit that it's not because of the flash in the pan moments. You know, the success of Windows, however much we web designers may bemoan Internet Explorer, and the success of the iPhone, these things were things that took years and years and years of dedicated work to get there. And you can't just turn those things on with a flick of a switch. And likewise, I think in the ethical realm, I think in politics, and I think, you know, as a Christian looking around at the kinds of things I want to do in, you know, my work potentially as a pastor in the future, helping people grow in their faith, those aren't the kinds of things you can accomplish just overnight. They're long, slow processes. And maybe most especially that last one, the idea of Christian discipleship is very much a long-haul process. And some of the parables Jesus offers in the New Testament about, you know, the various kinds of seed include things that spring up really quickly and then die really quickly. And the kinds of people that we really want to be as Christians, and so for Stephen and me, this is true, and then in my life and in the ministries I have, I want this to be true. We want to be people who have deep roots and who grow slowly but steadily. And then, of course, we want to do the same thing in culture and art and technology. We want to do these things well so that they will last.
I can appreciate that. You've mentioned that you are, A, you're going to school, and B, you are going to be a pastor in the future.
Lord willing.
Why would you like to become a pastor? That is a very demanding job.
It is. If I get to go there, and we will see, we have some significant health issues in our family, which have kind of put that on hold. So my goal right now is to finish school and see how things look at that point. But because I consider my family to be my first responsibility and my first sphere of ministry as a Christian. And so taking care of people in my family who have significant health needs to come first there. But if at some point I get to a point where I can go into pastoral ministry, the reason I want to is because my deep-seated passion in life, there are a lot of things I enjoy and love, whether that's composing music or writing, let's be honest, fairly mediocre poetry, or even developing software. All of these things I enjoy, but my passion is, and for years has been, helping people grow in their faith in Christ and become more serious, thoughtful, grounded, mature Christians. And then not just as individuals, but in the context of the church. So helping churches grow to be more healthy and helping churches to really be the kind of community that I think they were meant to be based on what we see in the Bible, based on what I see in the scriptures. And because that is my deepest seated passion, whether I end up vocationally being a pastor or whether I end up simply being a very well-educated layperson, my goal in life is to do that, to use the gifts God has given me and my ability to teach well, to do something that doesn't only benefit me, but benefits the community in which God has placed me. And that's my local church, wherever that may be. At the moment, North Carolina, in the past, Oklahoma and Colorado, and who knows where in the future.
There are a number of people on app.net who openly share their religious affiliation. Do you see this happening more on app.net than on other social networks such as Twitter, Facebook, and Google+?
It's hard to say. In some ways, I think it's probably similar to what I see on Twitter, but what I see as a fairly distinctive difference is the interaction between those circles and the circles of people who don't identify as Christians on app.net. I follow a lot of Christians on Twitter, and I think Twitter's actually extremely active in terms of Christians, and Facebook probably is too, because of the way social circles are constructed there. It's hard for me to compare. And elsewhere, places like Google Plus, I just don't spend any time on, and so I don't really have any way to compare. What I do see that seems unique to me on app.net is not so much the number of people identifying as Christians, but the number of people who are Christians who are interacting regularly on topics, including their faith and including areas that may be contentious in the public square right now, whether that's abortion or sexuality or whatever the case may be, across religious lines and between Christians and non-Christians of all stripes, whether those are people who are of other faiths, be that Judaism or Islam or Hinduism or so on, or whether that be people who profess no faith, being agnostic or atheist. Most of the time when I see that crop up on Twitter, there's a great deal of rancor involved. There's a lot of sniping at each other involved, and there's not much real conversation happening. It's mostly, you're an idiot. No, you're a bigger idiot. No, blah, to put it rather technically there. What I see instead on app.net is disagreement, sometimes very sharp disagreement, but generally in a fairly measured and respectful way that recognizes that the person on the other end of the conversation isn't an idiot, has reasons for believing the things they believe, and is worth seeking to persuade or at least to inform. And that I have found to be a very refreshing change of pace from what I've seen on other social media, and especially from what I've seen on most blog comments on the internet, which, as we all know, are the worst thing in the world, except for YouTube comments.
So do you think this is because the length of each post on app.net can be longer than it is on Twitter? Or do you think this has more to do with, as you said earlier, there are a large number of middle class, so probably more educated people using app.net over other system or other more popular social networks? Do you think it has something to do with education, or is it just luck of the draw?
I think there's probably some of all of the above going on there. I think the added character length makes a very big difference, especially when you're involving multiple people in a conversation. I've had a lot of conversations on app.net where we're pinging back and forth between four or five different interlocutors. And at that point on Twitter, you'd be out of characters. By contrast, having an extra 112 characters gives you the ability to nuance things a bit more, and that's important. You end up taking up a lot fewer spaces with punctuation of the continuation sort than you do on Twitter to say the same sorts of things. So I think that is a big part of it. I also think that there are a lot of fairly well-educated people on the service, but I would also say that I've seen some very well-educated people on Twitter behaving like absolute dolts, and I've seen people who don't necessarily have that high of an education carrying them in a formal sense, carrying themselves with a much better comportment. So while that may be a part of it, I think we have had some luck of the draw in the sense of who has ended up on the service, and then just the timbre that the service has had and the way people have reacted when it has at times seen conversations start to devolve. You know, I've seen a lot of conversations where party one might disagree with party two, and then party three jumps on agreeing with party one, but doing so in a bad way. And party one turns around and says to party three, no, don't do it that way. That's not how we roll here. We're going to carry on this conversation in a way that shows each other mutual respect. And if you're not on board with that, get out of our conversation. We don't want that. And I do wonder if some of it is the nature of a service to which you have to opt in with money, or at least that was the original pitch. And so a lot of the original crowd were people who were willing to say, yeah, I'll drop $50 or $35 a year to pay for a really quality service. I think that's where the real selection bias comes in terms of our community, even though there's now quite a large quantity of people who are free users. That initial bias in the community, I think, carries on. not so much necessarily because the people who are on it have to pay now, but because the people who shaped the initial expectations and parameters for discussion on the community were people who were willing to pay a price to have a good community.
Hopefully we'll see more of this going forward on app.net. It's great when more people jump into a conversation, but I agree, it needs to be done in a respectful way. So just like children who misbehave on a playground are told by their parents not to do certain things, mm-hmm. we need to do the same thing on the network to keep it as it
Absolutely.
Is. All right, so let's move on to the final section of our podcast. And this is when we get to recommend some of the people that we follow on app.net who make the service such an amazing place to be. So could you tell us three people on app.net you would recommend, as well as why we should follow them?
I can do that. First recommendation came to mind immediately was a fellow whose handle is Oluseyi. I'm hoping I'm pronouncing that right. It's Oluseyi. Outstanding fellow with whom I've had some of the most interesting conversations I've had on app.net. He's a software developer and very, very sharp guy. He is, I believe, no longer a Christian and spiritually open, but broadly agnostic is what I've gotten from my interactions with him. He is far more liberal than I, and yet for all that, we have had some absolutely great back and forths, and I've really enjoyed them. I've learned a lot from interacting with him, both about software and about life and culture and ethics. He's provided some great feedback along the way as a regular listener to Winning Slowly, which I really appreciate. And in general, he's just the kind of thoughtful person that I think people ought to be following and interacting with. Second, I would point to Anna Tarkov, who is one of the most prominent female voices on app.net, I think, and rightly so. She's earned that. She is a thoughtful gal who is working on starting up her own magazine. Again, very different worldview to mine. She's Jewish. I'm Christian. She's liberal on a lot of areas, progressive in areas where I'm conservative, more restrained on a lot of issues. But again, we've had an enormous number of very fruitful and productive conversations. I don't think we've changed each other's minds on anything, but I've enjoyed talking with her, and I've never come away thinking, you know, this person just doesn't have a clue what I'm talking about, doesn't respect me, doesn't care what I want to know. Quite the opposite. And both she and Oluseyi have demonstrated often that they're willing to say, you know what, I got that wrong. And that's something I find enormously admirable. Last but not least, I would point to Clark Gobel, who is inevitably talking about something interesting. And those something interesting sorts of things tend to range all over from healthcare policy to technology to religion and ethics, basically all the kinds of things I'm interested in. And again, he's an extremely fair interlocutor. He's willing to admit his ignorance when he's ignorant. He's willing to ask questions. And generally, if you look at the people with whom he's interacting, you're going to get an even better list of people to follow on app.net, because all the people with whom he's interacting are exactly the same sorts of fellows and ladies.
Thank you for that excellent list. And thank you again for being a guest on Discover ADN.
My pleasure. Thanks for inviting me on.
This concludes the sixth episode of Discover ADN. Once again, I would like to thank Chris Kreicho for taking the time to chat with me. Show notes for today's episode can be found online at discoveradn.10centuries.com. That's the number 10, centuries.com. And I would like to also thank our sponsor for this episode, Alpha Efficiency. Have a nice day.